Hi, filmmakers. Jason Brubaker with Filmmaking Stuff, where we show you how to make, market, and sell your movie without the middleman. I'm talking to you from sunny Southern California, and I'd like to welcome you to the show. Today's show in particular is super exciting for so many reasons that I can't wait to get into them. First of all, you're actually listening to the 100th Filmmaking Stuff podcast, which if you've been listening to it for a while, I'm so happy that you've come along this fun journey down the road of entrepreneurial filmmaking. And joining us in today's conversation is Nick Soares, the CEO of Distribber, as well as Nick Palmisano, who you may know because a lot's being written about him. He's a producer behind a film called Range 15. And Range 15 has been going up and down the charts like crazy on iTunes in particular. It's kind of fun to bring you guys both together because Nick Soares, CEO of Distribber, him and I actually met quite a few years ago when I was working at Distribber, and he was a client of mine.
Yeah. So I got into filmmaking right out of high school. Was very fortunate, got an internship at Universal Studios. Nothing special, just got, you know, I was the lowest of the low, helping move lights here and there, but I loved it. Loved the idea of filmmaking. I completed that internship after a year, and then right away, raised money from my family and friends to produce my first movie called Ghost Game. And this was back when the DVX100 came out, right? So it's the first time you had 24 frames a second in video. And produced my first movie. Over the next 7 years, produced 5 more feature films. Long story short, got them out into the marketplace. So it wasn't like they just didn't go anywhere. So you would think that some, at least a penny, would have came back to me. But the problem is with the setup back then was you had to use all these gatekeepers that would screw you with your royalties, right? So I just can't believe that my films were in Blockbuster Hollywood Video, and no matter how much the films made, the money would never come back to me because the expenses would always, always exceed the amount of revenue. And it would jump from film to film. If a film generated 50 grand, it'd have 50 grand in expenses. If a film generated 200 grand, it'd have 200 grand in expenses. You know, being an entrepreneur myself, I was really frustrated and kind of upset with myself that I went on for that long producing movies and not being smart enough to realize, you know, I need to start generating some money. I decided at that point to stop and try and become the hero for independent film. Started my own distribution company, completely failed at it just because I didn't know what I was doing. Learned from my mistakes, didn't give up, kept going. Created a break-even business, heard about Distribber from Indiegogo, and called up the CEO and said, hey, I want to buy your business. And long story short, 9 months later, I was able to acquire it. If I could go back, I wish I had Distribber to access the marketplace and keep all my revenue. It just makes logical sense.
And shifting gears to Nick Palmisano with your film Range 15, in a sense, what makes this so interesting is you're exactly the type of filmmaker that Distribber, frankly, was built for. And by the way, listeners, this isn't just the top 10 in one category on iTunes. It's all of iTunes, like competing against major studio hits. And it's a phenomenal success.
My approach to just everything at this point, because I've been in business for a while, is I start with the assumption that there is an inefficiency in the system. And so, you know, I've never been in any business, around any business, where I've looked at it and said, wow, this is just so good that it can't be improved. And so, you know, I own a company called Ranger Up, which is, you know, the largest apparel company in the military space. And some of my best friends own a competitive company called Article 15, which is in the same space. And both of us are very good at social media. And, you know, most of our videos go viral. You know, if we launch a video on Facebook and it does, you know, less than 300,000 views in a day, we consider that a failure. A success is 3 to 5 million in the first, you know, 24 to 48 hours. And so we've built this formula of creating great content for our fans, and offering them products that they want. And basically they buy products from us. Those products allow us to make great content, and we have this really cool symbiotic relationship. So we've built up a lot of trust. Mm-hmm. All of the guys involved in this film are ex-military. I was an Army infantry officer, Ranger qualified. The rest of the guys are, you know, either special forces, Rangers, JTACS, which is an Air Force, special forces unit. And so, you know, we have this camaraderie, and we have a very passionate audience in the military, police, firefighter, EMS community. And so we make content for them. Mm-hmm. And so we were sitting around at some point and we said, you know what, we should make a movie. None of us had ever made a movie before, but we had made tons of skits for YouTube and for Facebook and so forth and so on. And, you know, everybody basically says, like, this is impossible. You know, like, you can't break into Hollywood.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's not the way that I ever look at things. And so I said, okay, well, let's figure this system out, and let's see if the system likes us or if we have to find, you know, a more efficient way through this. And so, you know, we went the traditional Hollywood route at first. We put together a script, approached a bunch of people, it's inappropriate. No one will like this.
Right.
You guys aren't actors. You can't be in it. You know, we're going to have to hire actors. What do you think about this guy? Like, and no one understood the vision. No one understood where we were trying to come from. No one understood our community. And so we just got frustrated and said, all right, you know what? We're going to raise the money ourselves. And so we hunted down Ross Patterson, who's a director. He's a real wacky director, but he's very creative, very original. And we asked him if he would direct it if we had the money. And he said, yeah, but he's like, I'm just going to be honest with you. Like, it's impossible to get the money. How are you going to get, you know, the money you need for this? And we're like, oh, we're going to crowdsource it. And he actually started laughing. He's like, you know, I hope you do it. If you do it, I'm on board. But, like, no one can crowdsource that much money. And so, you know, we went out there. We had a goal of $350,000. As a collective, we were throwing in $500,000. And we figured, you know, we hoped for $350,000, but we thought we could get to $500,000 and have a budget of about $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
And we ended up raising in about 45 days $1.2 million. And that's because we have a community that is passionate about what we do, but we've built it up over time. And I think that's one of the things that for all filmmakers, for all people that want to get into film, make their own movies, a lot of people think of it as a zero-sum game. Like, you have to start with a big hit. But the reality is, if you're shooting every day and creating content and posting it for free on YouTube, on Facebook, and you're building an audience, like, at first you're going to post something that you love, and it's going to get 100 views and you're going to be depressed. But I guarantee if you create content for a year, at the end of that year, maybe it's 1,000, maybe it's 10,000, maybe something that you make hits and does 2 million views, and all of a sudden people are looking at all your old stuff and saying, oh, this guy or this girl is pretty creative and interesting. You build an audience, and as soon as you have an audience, you really don't need anyone else. And that's something that we've known for a long time. So, you know, we hit our $350,000 goal 40 hours into it. And the president of Indiegogo called our director and asked, you know, who the F are these guys? Like, is this
right?
Are they really a studio? And this is just like a ploy to get attention. And he's like, no, man, like, they're military guys. They told me they were going to do it, but I didn't believe them, because who raises this much money? And then the number kept going and going and going. And then that's the way we approached everything. Like, people ask us, you know, how did you get William Shatner to agree to your movie? It's a zombie movie with five dudes that have never acted in a single film. You know, like, how do you do that? And the truth of the matter is, I wrote him a really nice letter. I explained to him, you know, like, I really respect the guy for the work he did on Boston Legal in particular. And I wrote him about that. I thanked him for some of the work he quietly does with veterans and asked him if he'd do it. And he said yes. And that's not an approach anybody ever takes. And so he said yes. And then once he said yes, all of a sudden other people were interested. And, you know, and Sean Astin came on board. He called us. He was like, man, this project looks really cool. Like, can I help? And we were like, I don't know, Sean, you know, I mean, we're kind of packed. No, we didn't say that. We were like, yeah, you can be on board, you know, for sure. And so we ended up with this ridiculous cast and everybody's like, how did you do it? And honestly, it was just, we just kept trying.
Yeah.
We try. A lot of people said no, but you know, and some agents said, you know, literally like they read the script and saw who we were and they were like, they were like, I'm insulted you came to me and asked my client. Well, guess what? You know, next time around, we're not going to ask your client. You know, you treat people like that. Like, you're a jerk. We're not going to work with you again. And that's our approach, but that isn't the way that Hollywood works, which we learned throughout this. Like, people feel like they can treat you terribly and nothing happens to them. Like, we treat every, like, I don't care who you are, you know, whether you're, you know, whether you're, Bruce Willis or you're, you know, an extra, like, we treat everybody well and we expect the same in return. And actually, you know, for the record, Bruce Willis was interested, but he was doing his first play the same date we needed him to film. But he actually returned the call personally, which I thought was super cool. Yeah, super cool. I mean, he's Bruce Willis. Like, he doesn't have to even look at us, you know. But so we put together this really cool cast just by being nice to people. And we found other people that were nice, that were good human beings, that like the work, and that's how we put together a cast. And then, you know, we talked to some, you know, all of a sudden we raised the money. Now all of a sudden we're getting 200 messages a day from distributors. And, you know, I talked to a bunch of people that have done their own projects. You know, I've got a friend who was the director producer of a documentary called Murph the Protector. It was in Walmart. It was number 8 on iTunes for a while. Like, it was a very successful documentary.
Yep.
And I think it did $6-7 million in sales. He's still in debt from that movie because he signed with a distributor and same kind of thing. Oh yeah, you'll get this percentage, but no upfront money. And they always find a way that you don't make money no matter what. It's a ridiculous racket. It should be illegal, but somehow it isn't illegal.
Absolutely.
And so no matter who we talk to, like, the best that we heard from anybody was you have to negotiate big upfront money because that's the only money you're ever going to see no matter how much it sells.
Yeah. And
I was like, well, this is ridiculous.
I agree. I mean, and I think Nick can chime in on this too, but you know, from a business perspective, who wants to go into a business where the culture of the business is to build something for nothing? And I think your approach to that and looking at that and saying, this is ridiculous, is appropriate. And what makes the story interesting is you guys didn't settle for anything.
Yeah, not at any point.
Yeah.
You know,
Nick, I tell you this all the time. I know via email, but, you know, just after hearing that story, you know, in person on the phone, you know, I'll say it again. Everything I've been doing the last 10 years with Distributor was for that exact reason. So it's just like music to my ears to hear, you know, something that we've been building up to democratize film distribution and give access to the marketplace for filmmakers like yourself. Man, I tell you what, there's no better feeling. So that's it. I just wanted to say that.
And how many meetings did you guys take with traditional distributors, and how often, or I guess how frequently did you start to hear the same story over and over again? Where
every story is the same. We got about 220 emails. We took about 25 phone calls. We had 6 or 7 in person. And the thing, the only way I can describe it, and for those of you that have gone through it, you understand, but like, you can tell them, you can give them data. I'm a data-driven guy. I run a multi-million-dollar apparel business. Like, I'm not a moron. and I'm sitting here with data. Like, this is my customer list. It's a huge customer list. This is Matt's customer list. This is how we advertise. We were number one in social media by Internet Retailer Magazine 3 years in a row. Like, we are good at this. This is what we think we can do. And they look at you, and there's just a blank expression in their eyes because it doesn't fit into the paradigm they're used to. And they just immediately switch to, look, here's what we can do. I can get you $500,000 up front, and we'll get you 5%, and then, you know, you'll make a fortune, and then we'll immediately go and we'll do another movie. But instead of Matt being the lead, it'll be Jean-Claude Van Damme. And you're like, are you kidding? Like, did you just not hear anything I said about how this movie is for the military community? They're the ones who funded it. They're the ones that want it. This is why we're not backing off on the script at all. This is why we're shooting it our way. Like, you just pitched everything we hate about this industry after we explained to you specifically why we were doing this. And so no one listens. They want to do is they want your audience. They want to get the film super cheap, and they want to, you know, make a bunch of money, milk it for all it's worth, and get access to your audience, and then throw you away and wait for the next hot thing.
Yeah, I think the irony, you know, with this, with distribution in general, and Nick Soares, feel free to chime in, but I think the irony is with those traditional deals, the only people that get traditional deals are the filmmakers that, frankly, don't need a deal to begin with.
Yep.
And especially you guys. I mean, you guys have your audience.
Nick said it, right? If you have your audience, there's nothing else you need. All you need is access to the marketplace, and you guys, the content creators, can do the rest, right? I mean, now we have that access to the marketplace, and you know, if you have your audience, you can create, hopefully, you know, a snowball effect. Once that snowball effect occurs, then it's just all about the content. If the content's good, it'll stay up there. So it's just been really, really fun to watch Nick and his team, guys who know what they're doing, release a movie the right way, right? It's been really fun to watch this. Just out of curiosity, Jason, I'm totally not trying to hijack your deal here, but please. Nick, out of curiosity, Nick, over the last couple of days since you've been up there in the number two position overall, what's your life been like? What's been going on?
Honestly, you know, we're gearing up for the next big push. We're going to do a big marketing push tomorrow in the hopes of knocking those birds off the top. You know, I mean, it's a little tough right now because, you know, if we were in second place to The Revenant, or we were second place to like Son of a Woman or some like real movie, you know, like it would be easy to swallow. Like, you know what? We did as well as we could. We were going up against DiCaprio. But we're going up against animated birds that you put in a slingshot and hit pigs with. So, like, it's a little hard to stomach. But now the crew is, we're super happy. I mean, super happy. It's an honor to have the kind of support from the community. It's really neat to see, a lot of people that have no idea who we are buying it now and writing to us and saying, you know what? Like, I'm not in the military. I never even heard about this movie before, but it was really funny. I had a good time. Like, good luck to you. Like, we're getting messages like that, and that's cool. And what I'm hoping, you know, like, we're all ex-military, but at the core of it, just like anybody, we consider ourselves to be creatives. We consider ourselves to be artists, and I hope that we just gave a blueprint for any filmmaker. You know, and I'm not saying that, like, you know, obviously we have this huge audience we've started with. So, you know, people sometimes jump to, well, you're lucky you had this audience, but we built this audience up over many years, you know, so that what we did was we created content and built an audience. That's something anybody can do. And sometimes I think filmmakers need to remember that, all right, most filmmakers that I've spoken to have been toiling away for 5 years, 8 years, 10 years, and they get a little taste of mini success here and there. But for the most part, they're hoping for that big break. Well, in that same 5, 7, 10 years, you could be producing content while simultaneously looking for that big break, but building your audience and building your audience and building your audience until one day you wake up and say, you know what? Like, my audience is big enough that I can do whatever I want. And so like any, you know, if you play the long game, anybody can do this. If you're up for the long game, if you're willing to create content, be self-critical, make sure you're actually delivering the content that your audience wants, any filmmaker can do what we just did. And I think that's really interesting. If I was 20-something right now, just getting into film, I'd be looking at us and saying, not only am I going to do what those guys just did, but I'm going to be better and I'm going to smoke them. And, you know, I don't need Hollywood. Like that would be the chip I would have on my shoulder right now if I was 20-something just getting into filmmaking. Because, you know, we used a platform called Tug to get into theaters. And, you know, they basically rent out theaters wherever there's demand. So we, you know, we were able to, in two Wednesdays, we did about $800,000 theatrical, which for, you know, is the second largest independent film run in the last 2 years. And that was, you know, that was amazing to have that many people see it in theaters. And then I'll tell you right now, and it's not because Nick's on here, but Distributor's the best experience that I've had. Everybody's professional. Everything they said they were going to do, they actually did. Now that, you know, we're moving up the iTunes charts, they've done a bunch of things to improve the way that iTunes is looking at us, and they're trying to help us. It's been awesome. And so I think this is the future. I think you're going to see, I think the new, with the amount of content that people need, right? You've got your Netflix, you've got Verizon spending more on content than anybody right now. You've got Amazon Prime. You've got new things popping up every day, YouTube Red, like everybody needs content. And if you look at the big content creators on Facebook and on YouTube, you know, like if we put out a video that 3 to 5 million people see in a day, that's better than most cable shows.
Right.
And, yeah. You know, so you start putting those numbers together. If you're really honest with yourself and you take yourself out of the old paradigm of, I've got to go to Hollywood, I've got to convince somebody to give me a shot, I've got to get screwed for 5 to 6 years while I work my way up and finally somebody actually pays me for my work. Like that business model sucks. And with the internet, there's just really no reason. There's no reason to do it.
Well, it's really interesting. I mean, you come from an outside perspective. Do you even think of yourself as a filmmaker, or what's your worldview in terms of how you look at the film you made? Is it more of a product? Or how do you think about yourself?
I think of myself as an entrepreneur, but I've always loved film and I've always wanted to make film. So the first video I ever made was when I was 13 years old. It was a wrestling team compilation video. And then after that, I started making skit videos and I've just been messing around with stuff, you know, forever. And I'm coming up on 40. So when I say first video at 13, I was doing that with like two VCRs and a tape deck track for the music. I mean, you know, tying it all together with RCA cables. So I've always enjoyed film. I like showing people the final product. I've never had a stage like iTunes. So this has been incredible. Like seeing, I'm an iTunes guy. Some people are Amazon people, but like, you know, every night when I actually have time, I just flick through the top of iTunes and see what's new. You know, that's how I found the movie like Ex Machina, which super cool indie film that just came out. Although I don't know if you can call it an indie film because it had a budget of like $18 million. So, I mean, I think we need to be honest with ourselves. But you know, nevertheless, you know, like that's how I found that movie. And like that's how I find, you know, new stuff nowadays. So like to turn on iTunes and see our movie is surreal. So, I'm a guy that has like 2000 DVDs. So it'd be dishonest for me to say like, I don't love film. But I think I'm an entrepreneur first and a filmmaker second. Maybe someday that'll change, but
it sounds, forgive me for interjecting, but it sounds like you might have that opportunity in your future. What do you think, Nick Soros?
Well, that's interesting. So what Nick just said is exactly how I would refer myself, right? I'm an entrepreneur first, filmmaker second. And I don't think you have to be a filmmaker first, entrepreneur second, because you know, a big pivot in my life was first understanding the business side, right? There's three categories of filmmakers. There are, I don't know if I should say that. Let me try to explain it. There are artists, right? People who don't care, who buy it, rent it, they make it just for the art. It doesn't matter who watches it. There are, you know, the investors, the people who are just doing it for the money and don't understand, you know, audiences, right? And then there's what I call an artist slash investor. And that's what we need more of. That's what I feel like filmmakers need to understand more, is the business side of it. All too often, distribution is not thought of until it's too late, right? So, you know, I don't know. I think it's totally fine to be entrepreneur first and filmmaker second. You know, that's how I am now, and, you know, making a lot of advances in the industry, hopefully, you know, with our new tools. And that's because of my entrepreneurship attitude. So yeah, that's my thoughts, Jason.
Yeah, obviously we have the CEO of Distributor. I work with Distributor. I'm trying not to make this a big Distributor commercial. And I will say there's companies out there that do some of the things that Distributor do, et cetera. But how did you find Distributor when you guys were out taking all those calls with film distributors and you were like, you know what, screw this. We don't want to do it this way. There has to be something else.
We just did a bunch of due diligence, how do we get on iTunes? Who does it? Who has the best reputation? Found people that had done it, talked to them, pros, cons, et cetera. And then I gave you a call.
Well,
that's the same way I approach everything.
Yeah, it makes sense. You do your due diligence, you do your homework, and then you find the route that makes the most sense. And then I can only imagine some of the distributors that were really coming after you strong, you know, I'm sure they weren't too happy about your decision to go more of a self-distribution route.
No, and we had a lot of small comments from people kind of like, good luck with that, and, you know, this is the biggest mistake of your life, like just nonsense, and you're like, we're going to be fine. Don't worry about it.
And you know what, Nick? Had you gone with them, had you gone with the traditional route, you would not know your numbers right now. That's exactly what I went through. And to date, it is still the same. People offer the sales data every quarter, and typically with a big zero amount due to producer. So, you know, speaking of data and Hollywood data and, you know, the new tech that we have nowadays, what are your thoughts? Because I just want to touch on this real quick. Again, it's really exciting for me to have literally spent years and years building a dashboard for filmmakers that understand, their audience. And so what are your thoughts on the day-to-day sales?
It's awesome. It's great. You know, basically the next day around 2 o'clock, I know exactly what I did the day before. And, you know, what that's going to, it's too early for me to really start experimenting because, you know, I look at the movie just like I look at anything that we sell. Day one, there's a huge spike. Day two, it's still spiking. There's probably 4 or 5 days of just high volume. And then you go to kind of a plateau. And so once we hit that plateau, I will start messing around with how I'm advertising the movie, which populations, how much I'm spending, and I will change one variable a day significantly and see what happens to that number the next day. And anywhere where I see a big move, I will invest more money. And so in this form, in this fashion, you know, I control my own destiny. Whereas, you know, if you don't have data, you can't do anything. You don't know what's working. You don't know if you're wasting money. You just don't know. And so, you know, thus far we've only done minimal, spend in terms of advertising, because at the beginning, we just want everything to just be based on our videos and our posts and our, you know, all the different social channels that we have. But once we hit that plateau, which again, typically takes a week, maybe 2 weeks if we're lucky. But once we hit that plateau, then we start messing with the variables and figuring out exactly what gets eyeballs in front of the movie and what converts. Well, and if you don't have constant data, you can't do that.
I was going to say, interestingly, you guys did some stuff that is, you know, not only have you bucked the system throughout this whole process, but even when you were releasing on iTunes, you chose to go at a premium price. You guys chose $19.99 when the world around you was saying, no, that's too high.
Yep.
And you also chose not to release a rental component. What informed those decisions for you guys?
I looked at what all the big movies do.
Yeah.
And I just collected that data over time. And, you know, if you look at all the Marvel movies, if you look at all the movies where people are anticipating it, you know, they start with the top price point and they don't allow rentals because they want, you know, they want purchases. And then after, you know, a certain period of time, usually around the month period, but sometimes as early as 2-3 weeks, you know, they'll turn on rentals. And then usually around a month and a half, they drop the price to $14.99. And then usually around 2 months, they drop it to $9.99.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the, you know, that's the model that we think makes sense. Why would we change that? You know, and the reason why, you know, and it's I understand why iTunes recommended it differently. They don't know who we are. And I don't mean that as an insult. They shouldn't know who we are. We don't cross over into Hollywood at all. We are the military, police, fire, EMS community. So why would they know anything about us when that's not their world? So to iTunes, you know, I've got this independent film that is coming in at this premium price point. You know, it's an interesting film. It looks like there's some people interested in it. I bet they would do very well if they drop this thing to $9.99, because that's what indie films should cost. Well, you know, our movie for our audience is more anticipated than Captain America. It's more anticipated than Star Wars. You know, it is the most anticipated movie for our community. And we want to treat it like a premium product because it is, you know, it is the best effort that we could do with what we had. And we wanted to treat it like a premium product. And we want to follow the exact same business model in terms of sales that the big dogs do. Because one thing I am certain of is that, you know, there isn't a lot that Hollywood necessarily does perfectly, but I guarantee the financing piece of it is about as good as it can be in terms of maximum revenue generation. And if we don't generate revenue, we don't get to play again. You know, we have to prove this thing is a success. And we want to do another movie. And so, you know, we can't, you know, make $500,000 and be like, look, we did it. We're heroes, because we're not. This has to be a significant multi-million-dollar success so that we get to play again. We get to make the sequel. We get to continue in the filmmaking business. And so that's what we're after. So we have to do it right. And to do less than what we know is the right answer is, you know, is a foolish mistake.
And to jump in real quick, you know, being able to retain 100% of your revenue could be the difference between continuing or not. It could be the difference between those two numbers you mentioned. So that's just so exciting.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting, too, that you decided to go with a very, you know, popular platform like iTunes. There's a lot of people in your position that said, you know what, I'm just going to put a player on my website and drive all of my sales there. And I know, Nick, you and the folks at Distribber often talk about, you know, why you might want to get into a popular marketplace, but we're seeing it play out. It looks as though you guys have made enough sales to climb in the rankings high enough so that more and more people are discovering your film who otherwise wouldn't have discovered it. Is that in line with why you guys chose? I mean, I know you're an iTunes guy, but is that why you chose not to put it on, you know, your own website or your own property?
Absolutely. The goal for us is to get on the iTunes, to get on the Amazon, you know, to in the future, in the not too distant future, you know, through you guys, to get onto Google Play, and be a top movie in the same places where Hollywood sells their movies. If you're at the top of iTunes, you won. That is the Hollywood, you know, yardstick, right? Other than obviously theatrical is the first thing, but the second thing is, you know, that iTunes chart, that Amazon chart, you know. And so again, it's we did this whole process our own way without the help of the institution of Hollywood. And then we wanted to go up against them head to head on the platform that they grade themselves on, and we wanted to beat them.
Well, yeah, I love it too. It looks like you guys have made some strides. I know we're getting to that time here in the conversation, but you know, before we wrap this up, I guess, Nick and the success you guys have had with Range 15, and where do you think this film industry, now that you've dabbled in it, you've done some good stuff, where do you see the future from a semi-outside perspective?
I think in the short term, depending on how successful this continues to be, I think that you will try to see that Hollywood will try to replicate this with other people, maybe just hire, you know, try to find other veterans, try to find other niche people, try to buy them out and try to kind of replicate this. I think that you'll also see more people, more filmmakers that have been watching what we're doing, that have audiences, immediately jumping into a project like this. And I think you're also going to see a lot of filmmakers start to build audiences because they see the value of it. Now, one thing I remind people of is, you know, you look at like the two of the biggest paychecks in Hollywood are Vin Diesel and The Rock. And it is not because they are the best actors on the planet. And I think they would both agree with that. But they both realized early on how important a social media audience is, how important that direct connection to your fans is. And that's why they can demand the money, because, you know, Vin Diesel can make The Last Witch Hunter, which, you know, is probably not going to win an Oscar anytime soon, and still make a bunch of money on it because his fans will go and see it because they like him. And so why not do what the most successful actors in Hollywood are doing for yourself? Why not control your own destiny? It's always better to control your own destiny. And you do that by creating a genuine relationship with the fans.
And Nick, with Distribber, the other Nick here, it's interesting to do an interview with two Nicks, by the way. I'm not sure if you're picking that up, but Nick at Distribber, Nick with Range 15 is talking about controlling your own destiny. Where do you see the business of distribution headed in a few years?
I think right now is a special time, right? I think distribution now is never been easier than before with all the tools that are out there. The day-to-day sales tracking, access to the marketplace, to any platform that you want. These were not available just a few years ago. So I think the future is going to be the continued technology. And data, the democratization has already occurred, right? With companies like Distribber, and next, I think it's going to be all about data, because Nick said it. It's your audience, right? Build your audience, and then once you have your audience, that's all you need. Now, moving on to the future, the addition of data from these platforms is going to be the next step. But as far as access, we're already there. In my opinion, next step is data.
Well, great, guys. I really appreciate you both coming on the show. 100th episode of Filmmaking Stuff. The fact that, your film Range 15, Nick, has made it in the top 10 on iTunes. The fact that you were able to utilize a company like Distribber that's really in a way disrupted some of the other more traditional models of distribution. I think there's quite a few things converging here in a great way. So I appreciate you guys both coming on the show.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Well, filmmakers, this has been another Filmmaking Stuff podcast where we show you how to make, market, and sell your movie without the middleman. I'm Jason Brubaker with Filmmaking Stuff, and you can always reach out to me, jason@filmmakingstuff.com. Until next time, take action and make your movie now.